This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, how social media is shaping today's politics. But first,
thus justice permits little compromise. Justice is a full-bodied reach from the ground, and mercy is the courage to acknowledge every pore on both the oppressor's and the oppressed's face. There again are the stars.
Maria Bobbitt from this year's Cincinnati semifinals of Louder Than a Bomb. Louder Than a Bomb is the world's largest youth poetry slam. It started in Chicago 15 years ago as a way to unite young people and let them hear each other's stories and experiences. The finals for the local contest in Cincinnati will take place April 9th in the Corbett Center for the Performing Arts. And joining us to talk about Louder Than a Bomb are director of the Taft Research Center, Dr. Adrian Parr, spoken word instructor for the youth organization Elements, Jory Ann Cotton, and architect Terry Bowling. They're all part of Louder Than a Bomb's The Cincinnati Team. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Adrian, Jory, and Terry, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Adrian, tell us some more about the origins of Louder Than a Bomb. What was the thinking behind it when it started in Chicago in 2001?
So young Chicago authors set up Louder Than a Bomb in Chicago, and it was a wonderful way to bring together young people from across the city, and to also it provides a platform for people from different constituencies to come to get to know one another. So it's also a wonderful way to provide a kind of mixture of different socio and economic groups to get to know one another, and to use the shared medium of poetry in its spoken word format, which has some wonderful resonances with hip hop and rap culture, which young people are already drawn to, through which to express themselves and some of the hopes and dreams and struggles that they were encountering, and to do this in a way with a community that's very, very supportive. So one of the added benefits of Louder Than a Bomb, and why I was interested in bringing it here to Cincinnati, is that it sparks young people's interests in reading and writing. It enhances literacy skills, and especially in a city like Cincinnati, where we are encountering a high child poverty rate, which also has a direct impact upon learning outcomes. I thought that this might be a fabulous kind of program that would help facilitate better learning outcomes for young people, as well as provide an opportunity for young people from all kinds of backgrounds and different parts of the city to get to know one another and generate community building.
So why the name Louder Than a Bomb? How did that come about?
Hip-hop song from Public Enemy.
Yeah, Public Enemy, KRS-One, I believe, yes.
Okay,
That's a line from one of his songs. And so the creators in Chicago, they decided that should be the name of the poetry slam.
And there's something
I just
really
had to recall that.
Yeah, beautiful about this idea of your voice being louder than a bomb.
Right.
You know, amidst a world at the moment that is filled with violence all over the world, and at a time in America's history where, you know, race relations have certainly become tense, to put it in sort of mild terms. I think, you know, this notion that speaking your voice in a public manner as a way to kind of both intervene within that dynamic and to sort of think of the voice, the spoken voice, as a sort of transformative power other than sort of violence in a more direct sense, I think is a really fascinating sort of idea. It was not necessarily something that I was consciously thinking of when I was bringing it here, but what was fascinating was around the same time that we had the first year of Louder Than a Bomb, this was the time when, you know, race relations between young African Americans and the police were really kind of intensifying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So obviously some of the poems that came out of that first year were addressing that, and we're having more of that this year as well.
And now this is the second year that it's been held in Cincinnati?
That's right.
How much growth have you seen in the event since that first year?
Many more schools have come on board.
Yes. Lots, probably about 4 or 5 more schools are on board now. And then just we can definitely tell that it has grown by the individuals that performed in the Indies, I should say. So I think we had about 40 young people perform as individuals. And then we had to slice that down to about 15 students performing this Saturday coming up. So that just, yeah, that speaks volumes to how much we've grown.
How many students start off initially in the whole competition?
Let's see. So we started off with, we started off with about 10 schools, and then we made it, we had 8 schools in one organization, which is Elements, come to semifinals. Then we cut that in half to 4. So we have 4 schools performing April 9th, and then we started off with 40 individuals, and some of those students come from the schools as well. So then we pretty much cut that in half as well. So we start off with 40 and about 10 schools, 40 students in 10 schools.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation about Louder Than a Bomb, Terry, how did you get involved with this?
Well, last year, Adrienne invited us to work with her and all the other organizations. I'm a professor at University of Cincinnati School of Architecture and Interior Design, and we have a program called MetroLab. Basically 3 tenets, learning through making, community engagement, and material research. So it was a perfect fit for us to get involved, to get the students out in the real world, working with citizens, everywhere in the city. So we started out by, we didn't really know what we were going to do for the first competition, because we, it's a person and a microphone. And so we didn't want to get in the way of that. So we developed some supporting pieces or environments for the performers. So we created a platform or a stage, a backdrop, a DJ booth, and then we started to develop an exhibition of sorts. And we're reusing some of those same components this year, but we're actually adding on to the exhibition portion. So we're really trying to emphasize the engagement with the rest of the community. In other words, people that are not just performing in the competition, but trying to reach out to everybody else in the city through this exhibition format.
And Adrienne, how many different levels of competition are there?
How many different levels?
Yeah, you're down to the finals. So,
oh, I see. Yeah, yes. Yeah. So we have throughout the year we have open mics, and that provides an opportunity for young people to test out their poems. We also have workshops that are associated with those open mics, so they also provide an opportunity for learning initiatives where people... one of the wonderful workshops that was done was students were provided with short quotes from a broad array of poets from across history, and then they had to get up and perform that quote, but then also add their own material to that quote as a way to kind of spark their imagination and begin the writing process. So there's both workshops and open mics throughout the year, which all lead up to crossing the street, which is when everyone registers to actually appear in the semifinals. Then we hold the semifinals at DAP at the University of Cincinnati. And then after that, we have the finals.
513-419-7100 to join us. And what are some of the common themes that you hear from the people who take part in this?
Well, one of them is, I mentioned before, is issues around race relations. Another one is health. A lot of young people are going through difficult situations, both in terms of their own health or their parents' health, whether it's facing issues of addiction in a variety of forms or other kinds of special needs that they might have. Poverty is one, but also hopes and dreams for the future is another big one, and some of the anxieties about the future and where they're headed, I would say, are some of the other common themes that they address. Jory?
And I'd say... a lot of mental health. I've noticed that last year as well as this year, dealing with anxiety, depression, suicide awareness and prevention. So it was very moving to see that. So that was definitely some things dealing with race relations as well as mental health, which was really huge. To me, it just spoke to that these young people, they know who they are. They want to be healthy. They want to be free. They want to use their voice. So that was one of the moving things about semifinals.
And issues around LGBTQ.
Yeah, LGBT. That's another big transgendered one. Issues, yeah. Mm.
Terry, are you surprised by the depth of the things these kids do their poetry about?
Always. Every day. We're doing a lot of interviewing with the students because we're creating a documentary as well as part of this whole package in terms of what we're doing with Louder Than a Bomb. And I'm amazed at how articulate these kids are and how beautiful some of the prose is. I've never heard anything like it. So, yeah, we're constantly amazed, and I think my students are getting more out of it than they would have ever imagined.
Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking of the interviewing that you're doing, let's hear this, an interview that was done with Angel Kidd.
I'm Angel Kidd, but I go by Symphony with a C spelled, C-Y-M-P-H-A-N-Y. I go to the School for the Creative and Performing Arts on Central Parkway. And I've been rapping and doing poetry since I was 3 years old. Kid you not. I always was a knucklehead running around the house asking for James Brown CDs as a kid. I was asked earlier to tell my favorite part of my poem. And when I write, everything that I say is my favorite because every single word means something deeply to me. Like when I said, I put my heart in my music, feed it with beats. Rhythm resides in my heritage, whether it's rooted in bleach. I'm digging deeper than my teacher can seek. Until I reach Kunta Skeleton, sever it, and realize that these are pieces of me. With a thesis to be the greatest MC to ever record, but never receive a Grammy Award simply due to the fact that my melanin deep. It's just who I am.
Three years old.
Mm-hmm, I believe
she's been doing it since she was three, and that is just incredible.
And she's really able to capture like the sensuousness of language. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I love about Angel's work. It's so close to her, not just mm-hmm. her heart and her soul, but to her body. Yeah. There's something really sort of material about language mm-hmm. that kids are able to sort of express difficult sorts of emotions and feelings by tapping into the materiality of language. And she's exceptional at that.
Are a lot of the kids, though, are they shy and they need some prompting to do this? Or are most of them leaping at the chance to do this?
Well, I would say I've watched a lot of students from last year as well as this year. Like, I've talked to the teachers over the summer, the beginning of the school year, and then I meet with them and I go to some of their practices. So let's say September, you know, the students are shy. They're, you know, they barely want to speak. And then we had our first event in November 2015, and they were shy. Confidence level wasn't there. But to just watch them grow. And I had a young person on my team who, it must have been a couple of weeks before semifinals, I'm just like, come on, give it to me. And then like 2 days before, it's like, whoa, she just bursted out. So really just to just see the growth and the confidence, I think it's going to roll over into their interviewing skills, into, you know, making presentations, even if they don't go on to be this big, huge poet. Just the fact that they've gained this confidence, and you just need communication skills for life. So it's just amazing to watch them just grow in their confidence level and being able to express who they are.
And that people believe in them.
Yeah, people believe in.
Beyond the family unit, there are other people that step forward. Mm-hmm. And like you were just saying, come on, girl, you can do this, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that happens in the competition is if someone stalls, everyone starts clicking their fingers mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. support them on, right?
Come on, you got it. Yeah.
So that's really nice, mm-hmm. that moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Back to what Adrian was talking about earlier, it's a very interesting idea, this materiality of their voice. Last year when we did the exhibition, we concentrated primarily on the words because we were so infatuated with the words that they were using and the text that was coming out of that. This year we're getting lots of sound bites and we're trying to filter those and use those and recombine those in ways to try to get at the essence of what Adrian just mentioned, this like sensuality of the sound and the rhythm of the sound is very different from the written word. That translation from written word to spoken word is incredible. Mm-hmm. And that's part of our exhibition that's going to happen. So it's really going
to
be fun.
I can't wait to see it. Is it going to be pushing buttons to
no,
get the sound?
Okay. It's just there.
Okay, it's there. Okay.
It's there.
Great.
Yeah, so the form of what Metro Lab is doing, that form overlaps with the form of the spoken word itself. Because in the spoken word, it's the sound that's the matter that they're dealing with. And the sound is the material that Metrolab is dealing with as the basis for the exhibit. So I think there's a really beautiful poetic relationship between those two things, formally speaking, you know.
We will continue our conversation about Louder Than a Bomb, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking about the Youth Poetry Slam, Louder Than a Bomb, with Director of the Taft Research Center, Dr. Adrian Parr, Spoken Word Instructor for the Youth Organization Elements, Jorianne Cotton, and Architect Terry Bowling. They're all part of the Louder Than a Bomb Cincinnati team. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Adrian, their poetry slams have been around for some time. What makes this one so unique and so different?
Well, it's really the voices of Cincinnati, I think, you know. And that, in terms of it being here in Cincinnati, it has a different flavor and texture to it than, say, the Louder Than a Bomb at Chicago, and which I've been to as well, which has a very Chicago kind of feel about it. So that's the first thing. This is very much, even though it's a competition that's held now across 15 cities, all of them having grown out of the one in Chicago, each one of them has a distinctive flavor of its own, and none of them have, say, a collaboration with an architectural firm, right?
Or architectural group. Correct.
Yeah. So that's certainly very much a Cincinnati thing. And I think the fact that this one came out of a humanities center that joined forces with Elements is also a different way in which it came about in this city that's very specific to this city.
Let's hear another example from Louder Than a Bomb. This is Lena Alpiro.
Over and over and over and over and no, I don't speak Hebrew. Yes, I eat pork. No, it's pronounced spiel. Yes, I put a dash and some O when I write God. No, I didn't eat anything yesterday. I was at services all day. No, my denomination does not make me any less Jewish. No, my beliefs do not make me any less Jewish. No, I am actually Jewish. Why does it take a battering ram for you to understand that?
Again, you know, that's very deep. I mean, she's really...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just am impressed with that. And that's the kind of thing that you see a lot in this.
Yeah, the multifaceted layers of how identity is constructed comes through in that very short snippet that you just played. You know, we often... I mean, I think for young people too, they're going out into the world, they're learning about their identity and how they want to situate themselves in the world. And, you know, this provides them with an opportunity to communicate all the various layers of identity before society tries to kind of slot them into neat little categories, you know. So I think that appears a lot through a lot of them.
Yeah, I definitely agree. 'Cause, okay, The slam is for 13 to 19-year-olds. So kind of like what you were saying, Adrian, before the world kind of says, you can't say this in this meeting, you can't say that, you're going to lose your job, you're going to, you know. So they get to express themselves before, you know, they really hit the real world. But they're watching real things happen in their lives, and they get to express that. And I hope that they, this encourages them to continue to use their voice and not be afraid to use their voice once they do hit adulthood. So I think that's important. And I'm just blown away by what they were saying. I'm like a teacher, but I'm also teacher student. I've learned so much from the students. It's just amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of maturity in what you were talking about.
Yeah, a lot of maturity. Yeah. Very
and
much
there's something
so.
Very empowering and cathartic about being able to represent yourself on your own terms, not have an adult decide how you're going to be represented, whether it's through an ACT score test or what that might be. But you get to represent yourself on your own terms. And I think Metrolab is trying to tap into that with the exhibit as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the other thing that's very interesting is the discipline that it takes to get to that point. I mean, we're hearing the end product of the poetry, but you know that it takes hundreds of revisions and hundreds of iterations and preparation and memorization to get to that point. And, you know, we parallel that process, I think, in Metrolab. And that's the thing I try to get the students to think about. It's all through iteration and craft and care and time and love. You know, you have to put all those ingredients together to get this product that comes out at the end.
Okay, one more example here. This one is from Brandon Davis.
But see, that right there is the biggest misconception. Don't let peer pressure push you in the wrong direction. When you meet that fork in the road or intersection, go the right way, lest you learn the wrong lessons. Because you're going to learn them later if you don't learn them in school. When all that hanging out, playing around is no longer cool. When you got that low-wage job and your bills are still due, you're going to want to blame the man, but your problem's really you.
I like that message.
Yeah, he's fearless.
Really strong message of personal responsibility there. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
So the finals are April the 9th, Adrian. So what happens? What happens for the winners? Do they move on to another competition or is there a national?
Fabulous question. So I'm in the middle now of trying to negotiate with Chicago Young Authors to set up a regional competition because there have been several in this region. I think in Indiana as well, there's another one going. So that would be really fun to try and form a regional competition, but that isn't in place yet. At the moment, there's still city-based competitions. So this Saturday at Corbett Theatre at 6 o'clock it starts, and that's the culmination of this year's efforts, basically. And then we do it all over again next year with a new pool of performers, some of whom might have performed this year and are still in school and choose to come back next year. We had some people like that for this year's competition.
Who judges the competition?
Well, this year, different people from the community, people who are spoken word poets as well as community members who would just be great. So we have one of the judges, Vernon Element Jackson. He's a veteran poet from Cincinnati. He's going to be a judge. We also have another spoken word poet and host throughout Cincinnati, Ty Stuckey. And then we have Clara, I'm going to say her last name wrong, Matazunda from UC. She works with the Black Studies. She's going to be a judge as well. We have Megan Ferguson. Her brother was a spoken word artist. Then he passed away. So she put out his book of poetry. So different poetry lovers and community people. Last year we had Yvette Simpson. So we just try to get a variety of people to be judges for the competition.
And then our MCs are Dahani Jones.
Mm-hmm. That's
yay
right.
for Dahani.
He did it last year too, didn't he?
He did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's fabulous. Yes. And we've got a co-MC this year so that Dahani isn't working so hard because it goes for a few hours.
Yeah.
Malcolm London's coming in from Young Chicago Authors, a former winner of LTAB in Chicago, who's now gone on to become quite a established performer in his own right and has done TED Talks and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, Adrian, Jory, and Terry, thanks for joining me
this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Director of the Taft Research Center, Dr. Adrian Parr, spoken word instructor for the youth organization Elements, Jory Ann Cotton, and architect Terry Bowling. The local finals for Louder Than a Bomb take place April 9th in the Corbett Center for the Performing Arts at UC. And you can find a link to more information at WVXU.org.